Okay, maybe the occasional wedge. Let's talk golf. It's the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN Chicago. Presented by the Glenview Park Golf Club. Now here are your hosts, Mike Gilligan and Tyler Rocky.
It's a special Sunday morning extended edition of the CDGA Golf Show. Alongside Mike Gilligan, I'm Tyler Rocky. We talk golf with you every single weekend throughout the golf season, usually on from 9 to 11 a.m. on Saturdays. But we're with you until 10 a.m. here on this Sunday morning. We've got the Olympics now in the rearview mirror. We've got plenty of PGA Tour action as well with the Wyndham Championships taking place, and that's going to extend out into Monday as well, based on the weather that we've seen so far. So it's been a golf-packed weekend, and we're going to break it all down for you today. We'll talk to Charlie Nikitas up at 9 o'clock. He's your 2024 Illinois Open champion, so that'll be a fun discussion coming up at 9 o'clock today. But Mike, the Olympics are now in the rearview mirror. Your gold medal winner, Scottie Scheffler, won the men's side last week, and dramatic comeback fashion, and then Lydia Ko wins the women's side this past weekend. So it was especially on the men's side there, what a finish it was for Scotty to come back from down four strokes. And you just kind of put into perspective his year as a whole now, and he's got a major, he's got a bunch of other first place finishes, and now he's got a gold medal.
You know, it's just Scotty being Scotty. I mean, it's just amazing to watch this guy do what he does and does so well. I mean, how nice is it to put a green jacket on and drape a gold medal around your neck? Does it get any better than that? I mean, that to me is the ultimate flex statement in the game of golf. But for anyone who missed it live, watching the Olympic men's golf competition was an absolute joy. And I caught it on the way out, what I thought I was going to go out and practice and, you know, spend the morning. It was beautiful weather. And I started watching the Olympics. And then my wife came by and goes, I thought you were leaving a half an hour ago. And I said, well, I just wanted to see what Scotty was up to. But then he made a birdie. Then he made another one. Then he made another one. And then he made another one. So I was riveted to this thing and watched it all the way through. And it was, I found myself enjoying it almost as much as I do the Masters and the majors. Not maybe quite to the point, but it was really great theater. And you know, when we spoke basically the day before, we never really mentioned Scotty's name as
right.
a true medal, you know, recipient, or realistically having that chance. I mean, I offhandedly said, well, you never know, Scotty could shoot a 63. Little did I know, he was going to do one better than that and finish with 62 and finish in fine fashion in a way that he truly went out and won this thing. Now, many people may say, you know, that Xander gave it away or what have you. But I'm going to tell you, Scotty fired a 62 on Sunday just to let the world know I am the best on the planet and I'm going to prove it to you here in France. And really put what I consider the cherry on top of a heck of a year. And we haven't even started the playoffs. So 6 wins, a gold medal, I'd call that a pretty good year.
Yeah, it's a hell of a year the way that, and it's the Sunday Scotty that we've seen so many times this year, where he enters this killer gear that, quite frankly, he's probably the only one on the planet that truly has that, and just went out and took it. And you look at the way that, like you said, like Xander, did he give it away? It's tough to say you really gave it away when the guy who comes out on top fires a 62.
And you by 11.
Right. And you look at the way that he's done that time and time again this year, whether it was the Masters. And sometimes it's just playing steady. And that's what he did in the Masters, where he just played steady through that back nine. And that was the difference between him and guys like Ludwig, to really dominate down that stretch. Colin Morikawa was also a part of that. Like, that was the difference between those two guys, is he knows when to play steady and he knows when to get into attack mode. And that Sunday out at La Nacional, he went into attack mode, mm-hmm. and he completely dominated down that stretch. And to come away with the gold medal, I think, not that we really counted him out, like you can never really count him out when he's in that top 5-7 on a Sunday, but it's just like the way that Xander's played. Tommy Fleetwood has been really good throughout this tournament. Hideki Matsuyama, like you're talking about a guy in Hideki who's won big before. So it was just kind of one of those things where we got to that point in the tournament and Scotty just found that gear that no one else really on the planet has. And I thought maybe Xander would hang around because it felt like Xander was starting to develop that killer instinct a little bit. But that was far from the case on Sunday.
Well, with Xander, I mean, we were just applauding the efforts on how well he comes through on Sundays.
Yeah.
Well, except this Sunday.
It went back to the Xander of old.
Yeah, in a way, he certainly did. Now, is that the Xander that's exhausted? You know, is that the
And has spent a lot of time in Europe, too, lately.
He really has. But what I found most interesting is when you look at the podium finish, Scotty, Tommy, Hideki, each guy had that one round. You know, Hideki had that 63 in round one. Tommy follows it up with 64. But, you know, like to your point, Scotty was just steady Eddie, 67, 69, 67. And then I'm going to throw down the gauntlet and I'm going to go low with the rest of you guys, but I'm going to go lower than anybody and I'm going to go 62. So the top three guys, 62, 63, 64, at least one round. And when you look at the final rounds, or the final round and the rounds played by the field, you know, Scotty 62 is really impressive. And the only other person that went low was the other story was Victor Perez, the Frenchman. Mm-hmm. Now, this guy didn't factor in anybody's calculations of any sort to even be even on the team, for that matter, let alone finish in the top. Well, he finishes fourth, but he was so far back. But he went on a run himself. And what really captivated my attention watching on Sunday was what he was doing in front of his people. The Frenchman was on fire. And it was just so fun to watch. If you couldn't have been the United States, all of a sudden, you know, you have this affection for the Frenchman. And you really were hoping he'd make that last putt on the last hole to see if he could get on the podium finish. But I just thought overall, this Sunday provided such great theater. And all I could think about as the Frenchman was walking around the golf course is I wonder how many young French girls and boys are watching this, because you got to remember, France doesn't get professional golf very often in their country. They did have the Ryder Cup, yes. But aside from that, that's Europe and the United States. But to see the world's greatest there, I think was really a great opportunity to grow the game in the country of France. And I'll be interested to see what will happen over the next, call it, 5 to 10 years, and see what kind of players, junior men or women, come out of France as a result of hosting the Olympics and specifically hosting golf.
Yeah, like, and even if you think back to, what was it, the U.S. Open, when Matthew Pavone had himself a really, what did he finish, top five, top ten?
Oh, yeah.
When he had a really strong outing, too, like it's one of those things where it just takes a little bit, and then you see the game continue and continue and continue to grow out of these little benchmark moments that end up producing future stars down the line.
That's right. And I think Victor is doing that for his country. I mean, Scotty, going back to Scotty for a second, he is just absolutely amazing. And I don't know if anyone can really relate to him and what he's doing, because when you go back to Sunday and what he was doing at the to earn the gold medal, the first handful of birdies that he made, I think I could have made all those putts too. They were so short. They were like gimmies and kick-ins.
Well, that's always been the thing with Scotty. Like, this year is his putting distance on all these. I mean, it's like sometimes he finishes around and it's like he's made 24 feet worth of putts.
That's it. And you know, it's... it's amazing. The only putt that I think he really truly made was at 17, and that's really what kind of put him over the, you know, up out of reach of Tommy Fleetwood. But I have to tell you, I really wanted a playoff between Tommy and Scotty, because I just wanted to see more golf. Yeah. I'd still like to see Scotty win, but man, I'll tell you, it was so fun to watch Tommy Fleetwood playing some really, really good golf. And all of these guys hit some amazing shots throughout the day. You know, a guy that really I thought could have won this and should have won this was Hideki Matsuyama. I mean, his 71 on was really, you know, puzzling to me after a 63, 68, and he finishes with 65. I mean, I think they all can kind of state their reason why they think they should have won. And more aptly than anybody, John Rahm.
Yeah.
John Rahm, it was like the tale of two people that went out there. One played the first 10 holes. Then they put a body double out there, or somebody just literally flicked a switch and went from on to off. It was amazing to watch him unravel right before our eyes. He had it at 20 under par, I think standing on the 11th tee.
Yeah.
And ended up finishing minus 15 and out of it. So, you know, I'm firmly now convinced more than ever that this live decision for him, as far as his bank account, great decision. As far as what is best for him and his competitive means and his abilities to remain relevant and at the top of his game, bad decision.
Well, I mean, if you ask me, probably what, after the U.S. Open, is John Rahm's going to finish in a tie for fifth at the Olympics? I'd be like, wow, that's pretty good. And the way that he played also at the British Open, would not have expected that either. But he's starting to string together a couple of these rounds here, but it's like now we're on pause again.
Exactly. And that's why I think it's not good for him. And this pause part, I think, is the part that I think he's going to be okay. But that's just it. He's going to be okay. Okay, to your point, if you would have said, yeah, he's going to get fifth in the Olympics, you would have said, not a bad finish. Especially if he was in 10th place and made it all the way up to fifth. Mm-hmm. But what if I told you before it got started, yeah, he's going to have a 4-shot lead with 8 holes to go, then finish fifth. Then I think you're going to go, what happened?
Well, the thing about that is, I think the more unbelievable part of that is that he has a 4-stroke lead with 8 to go.
Well, yeah, I mean, so you know the old John Rahm is in there. The problem is, I don't know that Liv's schedule is enough for him to maintain that killer, keeping his mind. Whatever happened just wasn't happening the last few years on Sunday, especially on the back nine with John Rahm. Mm-hmm. And I just think that whether it's a mental thing or, hey, physically, I just haven't been going through 72 holes on a arduous process, you know, and I'm just out of sync on that last day, or the fatigue finally got to me. I just don't know. But for a guy that's a professional at what he does and does it at the highest level possible, I'm just amazed at how poorly he played on the last closing holes. It was the tale of two totally different players. And again, between Victor Perez, Scottie Scheffler doing his thing, and John Rahm, really, well, he started doing his thing and then started undoing his thing, made for some just amazing TV to watch and to consume on the Olympic golf side of the Olympic competition.
Yeah. All right. I want to go over some of the ratings from the Olympics and how they kind of stack up with all the other majors and what we saw so far this year. And then I've got a Tommy Fleetwood question for you, because where does he stand in golf? He silver medals at the Olympics, but where does he sort of stand in golf right now? Because I think he has an interesting kind of standing within the sport. So we'll do all that when we come back here. It's the CDGA Golf Show here on ESPN 1000.
More golf ahead. The CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club. To where you should play. This is the CDGA Golf Show with Mike Gilligan and Tyler Aki, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club.
segment brought to you by PGA Tour Superstore. Visit any of our Chicagoland locations today. Tyler Aki, Mike Gilligan, talking golf with you until 10 a.m. right here on ESPN 1000. Usually with you on Saturdays, 9 to 11 a.m. But we will be back with you again next weekend, 7 to 10 a.m. as well as Bears football took over the airwaves here at ESPN Chicago after a throttling of the Buffalo Bills yesterday. I think the city's pretty giddy with what they saw from the quarterback yesterday.
Holy smokes.
Anyway, getting into some more from the Olympics. And I just think that the Tommy Fleetwood conundrum is something that if you told a lot of people, like your average golf fan, that Tommy Fleetwood's never won on the PGA Tour, they think you're crazy. But that's the case.
Yeah.
He's never won on the PGA Tour, despite the fact that he's finished top five in every single major event, including a top five finish at the Masters this year. Like, he's had some really, really strong outings in majors. He finished tied for third at the Masters this year. He had two top tens last year, two top fives the year before. He finished second at the Open in 2019, second at the U.S. Open in 2018, and fourth in 2017. Like, he's put together some really strong results, but for some reason, he's never found it on the PGA Tour. And I think one of the forgotten things is who was on the opposite end of that 72-foot putt from Nick Taylor at the Canadian last year. Well, it was Tommy Fleetwood.
Tommy Fleetwood.
And it's one of those things where he's got this, he hovers around the top of these leaderboards, but he's never really won the big one on the PGA Tour. He's done it on the European Tour and some other tours, but never on the PGA Tour. And you would have thought that someone of his stature and who's produced the finishes that he's produced in majors just naturally would have stumbled into a couple of wins on the PGA Tour, but that's not the case.
No, and that's the wildest thing about Tommy Fleetwood. It's funny you even bring this up. Yesterday, playing out at White Eagle with my buddies, we talked about Tommy Fleetwood, and somebody just said, I can't believe he has never won, and one of the other guys in the group goes, that's not true. He's won a golf tournament. I said, yeah, he's won in the world, but he's never won on the PGA Tour.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, you sure? I say, you want to bet? And they're like, no. But it is. It's true. It's not only is he the best player, perhaps, not to have won a major, he's the best player not to have won on the PGA Tour.
Mm-hmm.
That is just absolutely incredible to me. He does have, I believe it's about seven wins around the world.
Mm-hmm.
But as you say, he's had so many top finishes in the majors. You know, he's actually had a seventh and a fifth, you know, in 2018 and 19 in the Players Championship, which is, again, considered another major in their eyes with all that's
right
on the line with the money and the exemptions. So he's just a guy that baffles me. And it just seems that he's learning, at even though he's 33, learning how to win. But I do think this silver medal experience is going to help him. And I think the future is only going to get brighter. And I expect Tommy to win before not too long. I mean, in the very near future. I would think by this time next year, he'll have two wins on his belt and maybe one of them a major. But I do think he's going to now be able to get across that finish line just because he now knows he belongs among the top in the world. And I think your mind is a very powerful place to be when you can put it in a good place as well as in a bad place. And I think he has a lot of upside as a result of this Olympic experience. And I think there are a few people that are taking away a lot of great, a lot of great experience and, you know, just, you know, a lot of great things and, mental makeup, if you will, going forward to how they're going to play the rest of this year, the playoffs, and how they look at the majors come next year. Because if you finish on the podium in an Olympic sport, I don't care what your sport is, you've arrived. And I just think that that's going to do a world of good for Tommy and the mental makeup and how he views himself. Because I don't think Tommy views himself at the same level as everyone else. And I think that's part of his issue, is that I think he didn't feel personally that he belonged in the same conversation as these guys until now.
The funny thing about that, though, is Tommy can go as low as anybody else on the tour.
Oh, yeah.
He can go, like, his best rounds, and that's honestly why he's in the thick of things so often, is that his rounds are uneven. You'll see, and it's weird, it literally works every other day. You'll see he'll be first after Thursday. He'll be first. And then he dips down on Sunday. He'll go out and shoot a 70 or something like that. But then he rallies back with a 63 on Saturday. And then what does he do on Sunday? Or sometimes he's off to a slow start on Thursday. But then he'll get you the 62, 63 on a Friday. And he'll get you that on a Sunday when he's out of contention. Well, maybe not out of contention, but he's probably like 20th or 15th back. And then he'll end up finding his way into the top five. And it all kind of comes down to people start getting the Tommy like rumbles almost. It's like, oh, Tommy's in the clubhouse, but he may have a chance at this thing still if things break his way. And they just haven't broke his way yet. But that's a tough way to play when you're entering Sunday down that much and you go out in one of the like a 10 o'clock round and shoot the best score on the course that day. And you find yourself in contention, but you just need too many people to stumble.
Right. And, you know, as I look at Tommy's career and how he went about breaking through on the European Tour first, he did so in a big playoff. I think it was a three-man playoff that he won. You know, so he finds himself, he wasn't chasing, he wasn't holding on. He finds himself tied for first, so he goes in and he wins a playoff. His next win, the Johnny Walker, he shoots 63 on the final day, to your point, and beats Dustin Johnson by a shot. And so he wins that in dramatic fashion. He needs to now start doing that over on this side of the pond.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this Olympic experience is going to help him. He has it in him to do over on his soil. He just needs to get his comfort level now to do it with the stars that are over here. And I think by going, you know, toe-to-toe with Scotty and beating most of everyone else in the Olympics, I think that went a long way in helping him prepare for that first PGA Tour win and or his first major.
Because you think about it, too. When we're picking our fantasy golf teams, how many times over the last, what have we done, like 8 or 9? How many times have we put Tommy Fleetwood in?
A lot.
We probably each, like collectively between the two of us, over the course of 16 times, we've probably put him in a dozen.
Oh, I'll bet it's 10 even to 12. More than that. I'll bet like, it's 14.
It might be.
Yeah.
Like, he's just one of those guys. You know he's going to be there. He's probably going to make the cut, which is also important in a lot of these pools. He's probably going to make the cut. Probably going to get you inside the top 20. Has the potential to get you inside top 10, top 5. And you want those guys on your team.
You do. And you're about to say, but you know he's not going to win.
Right.
You're picking him. But you know he's not going to win. But
right.
You know he's going to be there. And that is, there are a few players that are like that. And Tommy is one of them. But I think, again, and we've talked about this quite a bit, he is just an amazing, amazing ball striker. Mm-hmm. And his colleagues will tell you that. And that's why I think he is so up and down. Because he is such a great ball striker. When he is on, he is hitting it so close. And I mean, these are just tap-ins, because what Tommy's, you know, kryptonite is his putting. It's like a lot of us. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what I think is holding him back, is his ability to keep that thing hot for four straight days. But because he is such a good ball striker, he has a little bit of that Scotty in him. He can hit it close, but all he has to do is putt above average, and he'd have multiple PGA Tour wins. It's just, at the end of the day, something fails him to try to get the thing across the finish line whenever he's in America.
Well, and you think about it, too. Tommy Fleetwood has some of the best teaching tape that you could show a young golfer. I mean, his form and the way that he can create the torque around, like, that's something that if you were teaching a young kid how to golf, that's one of the guys you would show, because form-wise, you're not going to find a prettier swing.
No, in fact, I use a lot of his videos to help show people exactly the right position at, you know, P2 or at P4 and the different parts of the swing, because to your point, it's poetry in motion when he swings. It's a beautiful thing to watch. And you scratch your head going, why doesn't this guy win like every single week? Well, because they're just really, really, really good on the PGA Tour. And, you got to have it all together at all 4 days, and Tommy puts it together for about 3.5 is really what it amounts to when it's all said, his collective, you know, sample size of any tournament that gets played in America. Whether it's something mental or something that physically just breaks down, but I think for him, it's just another one of those mental barriers that he just has to get over. And again, I hope that the Olympics is going to help smooth that bump out a little bit for him.
Yeah. And I think the thing with the Olympics too, obviously there's the monetary element of finishing runner up at the US Open or wherever, right? There's the monetary element of finishing second, but I feel like, but you don't get any sort of trophy or anything like that. And I feel like maybe the Olympics, you come away with some sort of hardware, knowing that you're going up against the best in the world. Like, if you look at that Olympic leaderboard and the way that things finished, if this was a PGA Tour leaderboard on a Sunday where 1, 2, 3, you've got Scottie Scheffler, Tommy Fleetwood, Hideki Matsuyama, and then lurking in the distance at 5th, you've got Rory McIlroy, Tom Kim's right there, Jason Day, Xander, Wyndham Clark, they're all right there too. If you have all those names on a leaderboard, like that would do a great number. If this were a major, mm-hmm. and that was your final finish there, it would probably be one of the most viewed majors of the year just because of the star power that's involved. And for Tommy to be a part of that and finish runner-up only to Scotty, who went out and shot 62 and has been the best player on the planet for the last 3 years, there's a sense of accomplishment there, because I feel like a lot of people right now are playing for second behind Scottie Scheffler, and for Tommy Fleetwood to actually finish in second. And oh, by the way, there's something that you get to stand on a podium for this. You get a piece of hardware that comes out of it as well. You represent your country. I think all of that put together maybe shifts his mentality moving forward and gives him a little bit of something extra as he goes back to the PGA Tour and gears up for the playoff this time around.
No doubt. And you know what's interesting too, it's not as if Tommy gave Scotty the gold medal. I mean, Tommy went out and shot 66 on the final day.
Yeah.
If I would have told you, hey, in the final round of the Olympics, you're going to shoot 66 on Sunday, I'd like my chances to win.
Yeah.
But the guy ahead of you is going to shoot 62. So it's, you know, it's one of those things where Tommy can't walk away feeling like, I didn't do my part. I did. It's just Scotty did his in a way that is just Scotty-like. I mean, it just goes shaking your head. Otherwise, he beat all 58 other players and did it in fine fashion. And, yeah, for the most part, when you take a look at, let's say, even just the top 10, even 15, 20 names on this leaderboard, it's awfully, awfully strong. I mean, it does drop off quickly as you get further down.
It does, yeah.
But that's the nature of how the countries get the representation. And,
right.
And it's not every country is as blessed as the United States when it comes to depth and golf.
Right.
So that's why you do get a little bit of this, what I call broken teeth, when you look at, like, all of a sudden, yeah, I know that guy. I know that. Who? And what country?
Right.
And which I also found very interesting is sometimes people switch their countries up after a little while. Like Lydia Ko, for example, she represented New Zealand.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Instead of Seoul. So it was interesting. But yeah, I just, Tommy is a guy that I think may have benefited the most, because I don't know that winning the gold does a whole lot for Scotty in terms of now I can really go out and perform. Mm-hmm. I mean,
you could tell it meant something to him.
Oh,
for
it
sure.
meant something. And I'll tell you, when he was on that podium and he got choked up, that was real, folks. Mm-hmm. It's got to be just an amazing feeling to have a gold medal wrapped around your neck and your country's anthem is playing, not for the country, but for you and what you just did, and your country's watching and applauding and marveling at your accomplishment. And I mean, you think about the year this young man's had.
Yeah.
He had his first child. He wins Augusta. He's the fastest and first to win 6 before, you know, July, and the most money ever. And then we'll just, you know, throw a little gold medal on top of it.
And an arrest.
Yeah. Oh, and I also got arrested on that year too. But I also got out of jail quick.
And went out and played an adrenaline-packed second round.
Yeah, shot 3 under.
Yeah. All right. I do want to go into Scotty's year a little bit. We'll do that maybe at 8 o'clock. But Let's dive into some of the ratings, the TV ratings, because it was not pretty, despite the fact that Olympic ratings have been through the roof this year.
Except.
But golf kind of took a hit. So we'll discuss all that and kind of look at what the TV ratings say about the state of the sport right now. All that's coming up next. This segment brought to you by PGA Tour Superstore. Visit any of our Chicagoland locations today.
This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app. Golf is on your mind and on the air right now. This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app. Presented by Glenview Park Golf Club.
By Coghill Golf and Country Club, a pure golf experience. Tyler Rocky and Mike Gilligan talking golf with you as we do every single Saturday. And to be honest, I feel like we almost need to take a poll, Mike, because if you watch the Olympic golf, because the viewership was down from what we saw in Tokyo, down from Rio, it wasn't good. And you look at the way that golf is sort of viewed among the Olympic sports, because the Olympic viewing right now is up. A lot of people are invested. We've seen some, I mean, obviously there's star power in the pool. There's star power on the gymnastics mats. There's star power on the basketball court. It's there. There's star power on the golf course.
Lots of it.
But the ratings have not translated accordingly. Hmm. So this is from Golf Channel. The cable network drew 723,000 for the final round on Sunday when Scottie Scheffler took gold. Now, this was taking place. It starts at 7 o'clock local time in the morning here. So who knows what the? I mean, it's kind of like the British Open. That's your closest
like
comp.
It. Yeah.
There, but so for contrast, when golf returned in 2016 back in Rio, they averaged 889,000 for the final round, which still for golf standards very very low, but. You saw this dip another 160,000 viewers. Over the course of the four rounds this year, they averaged less than 500,000 viewers, which is down about 250,000 viewers from what they saw in Tokyo.
Which is wild, because Tokyo's time is far worse than ours, right?
Now, it is saying that in Tokyo, all of the rounds had a primetime start on the East Coast for U.S. viewers, just because the disparity within the time zones there. So you look at the way that golf is viewed on the Olympic stage, and maybe part of it is that it's a newer sport to the Olympics. I believe Charlie said during the break that it started in 2016 back in Rio. So this is only the third go-around with golf in the Olympics. And it's one of those things where you're not playing for FedEx points. You're not playing for anything aside from your country here. And it's like, I kind of get the same thing almost every other week on the PGA Tour, that my mind doesn't go there. If I'm going to consume the Olympics, I'm going to look elsewhere. I'm going to look for something. I'm going to look for gymnastics. I'm going to look for swimming. I'm going to look for track and field. I'm going to look for the stuff that I don't see the other 51 weeks out of the year. I'm going to look for something like that. And I think that's probably hurting golf. But when you look at just the course of what golf viewership was, so that's down a significant amount this year. The Masters down 9% this year. At 8.2 million. And usually they say like the threshold for a healthy Masters is you want to be around 10 million viewers for the Masters.
Right.
The PGA Championship was up this year, up 10%. They almost caught the Masters. But their average was 5. That's up 10% for them. But you have to remember, like, the Scottie storyline
that was
huge for them.
Yes.
Huge. US Open. Up 13% from 2 years ago. They peaked at about 11.5 million, got about 6 million as an average. But that, you got to remember with that one, that had a great leaderboard, with it. And especially you had the LIV versus PGA Tour conflict as well with Bryson. I think it helps that it was at Pinehurst, too. That's a recognizable course, a course with Q rating, a course that people want to see on television. So that certainly helps. And then the British Open this year, the ratings there were atrocious.
Oh.
3.2 million average and the smallest final round audience since 2015.
Really?
So, and that one, too, even though Xander came from behind in it, to some degree, it almost felt like it lacked drama still.
Yeah.
You look at the leaderboard heading into Sunday. It wasn't very good either. So that certainly didn't help it. I just think that when you see that, okay, two events are up, two are down. One is historically low within the last decade, and one is your crown jewel of your majors that's also down. What do you sort of see from the state of golf? Because I think Olympics, I don't put a lot of stock into what the viewership is. And I don't think this counts what the streaming on Peacock was either. But I'm not going to put a lot of stock into the Olympic ones because it's on at odd hours, A. And B, I don't think this gets the same draw. It has the same feel or any of that as what we see in these other events on the PGA Tour week to week. Like, for reference, what we're going to see on the ratings for the Wyndham Championship this week are going to shatter what we saw with the Olympics. And the Wyndham Championship is what?
Yeah.
A mess stop along the PGA Tour, right?
Yeah. I mean, and there's no...
Some guys are jockeying for some playoff position.
Right.
And like, I think last year's Wyndham was... That had drama in it because Justin Thomas was one of the guys that was...
There was a story within a story.
Right.
Because he was not only trying to... get into the playoffs. He was in the midst of trying to impress the captain to make
right.
the Ryder Cup team.
Mm-hmm. So there was
a lot of stories within mm-hmm. the story but it took other things
right.
happening to make it worthwhile to tune in.
Right.
And so yeah, I think what we're seeing, well, let's go back to the Olympics first.
Okay.
I think that the Olympics suffered, to your point, because when people think of Olympics, they think of track and field, they think of swimming, and they think of gymnastics.
Mm-hmm.
And my daughter and my wife, first in line, they couldn't wait every night, every day to watch it because, you know, my daughter's a track and gymnast herself. And mm-hmm. So those dominated. And I think the way NBC markets, you know, Biles and
yeah.
the different athletes, it's almost like you're getting to know them very, very well as we're starting to enter into the games. And they really do a great job, almost like Stock Car does with their drivers, with NBC does with some of these athletes. Like, I mean, how many people really knew who Noah Lyles was until this past week?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think they do a really great job at marketing those athletes and giving them relevance for that period of time so that people tune in. I don't think the golfers got that. And
right.
in fact, I think they just sat over on the Golf Channel. Yes, it's an NBC Peacock product, if you mm-hmm. will, but it didn't garner the same marketing and promotion and, you know, the fanfare and to make you excited about wanting to tune in and see must-see TV. Because to your power or to your point, star power, the golf had it.
Yeah.
It's just nobody knew about it. And mm-hmm. So many people that I asked, did you see the Olympics? Did you see, oh, was that on today? Oh, mm-hmm. I thought that was next weekend or during the, like, because nobody really knew.
Yeah.
And I really felt like it was some of our best golf and pure entertainment that went really unwatched and unnoticed. And I could feel it after the Olympics. Because when I walked around, like, nobody was talking about it. You know, the Monday after the Masters or the U.S. Open, it seems like that's all anybody can talk about. Did you see mm-hmm. the Open? Did you see the Masters? What about Scotty? What about this? And after the Olympics, it was like, did we win? Did who won? And
yeah.
Who won the gold? I have been asked that even days after. Who did win that? And it's like, are you kidding me? What rock did you just come out from under?
Yeah.
But golf, it just goes to show you, is still in the eyes of the big major sports. It's a niche sport in that regard still. Mm-hmm. And I, as much as I hate to admit it, it really is. And I think the Olympic viewership showed it. But I also think because it hasn't been a regular staple, I think next year, the next Olympics, I should say, should just crush it because it's at Riviera.
Yeah.
It's in L.A. Mm-hmm. Now, imagine watching the Olympics now in primetime.
Right.
Primetime golf. Mm-hmm. I mean.
And it's West Coast golf, too. But which
that's right.
You and I, we love when you get a major tournament out at Pebble Beach because you've got that West Coast kind of glow to it. You get it primetime, like you said.
Right.
It's different.
It's totally different. And I think you're going to see a lot more of that whole Hollywood effect. You're going to see the stars out there because, I mean, just look at how many stars went over to France. Can you imagine when the Olympics are in all of our A-list celebrities' backyards out in L.A. and Hollywood and, you know, Beverly Hills and all that good stuff? It's really, I think, going to crush anything that we're seeing now in terms of viewership. As far as golf is concerned at Riviera, the only thing that could hurt it would be you just get three non-names up there. You don't know who they are. The leaderboard's kind of vanilla and blah. That would be the only thing that would detract from it. Because I think as a golf course, it's going to do what it does best. And it's going to bring the cream right to the top. The best players will be at the top of the leaderboard because it's Riviera and not some unknown venue that nobody knows about. So I honestly think it's a stepping stone for the Olympics right now as far as golf is concerned and viewership and really understanding that it's now going to be a regular part of the Olympics moving forward, which I'm glad to see.
And I think part of it, too, that may help as well, you think about some of the big names from this year's Olympics. Simone Biles might not be there in 2028.
That's right.
Katie Ledecky won't be there in 2028. Nope. And then from a basketball standpoint, LeBron won't be there. Steph Curry probably won't be there. Kevin Durant probably won't be there. Like, you're going to be missing a lot of these guys. Now, the basketball, just because the NBA is so big, you're still going to watch. You're still going to know plenty of the names that are in it. But you're seeing, like, the guys that we only see, guys and girls that we only see every 4 years, a lot of those people are not going to be on the main stage. Like, who is going to be the big name? Like, if you had to forecast out now, I don't know if a lot of American people could tell you who that is. Who's going to be the big name at the Olympics in 2028?
Ludwig Åberg.
Maybe he will be.
Ludwig.
But they, a lot of people, I feel like, won't be able to tell you who's going to be the Simone Biles, who's going to be the Katie Ledecky of 2028. Because those two may not be competing at that point.
More than likely, they will not be. And that's where, again, the Peacock, NBC, has to get, you know, the public well informed as to who our next stars are going to be and whether that's through the world championships and the nationals and all the various qualifiers that they have. But meanwhile, you go back to golf for a second, Scotty's 4 years older. Mm-hmm. You know, Tommy Fleetwood now is 37.
37, yeah.
So now all of a sudden you're having discussions, well, he's kind of on the downside of his career and, you know, and that's just 4 years away. So, you know, it's been interesting. And I think that the Olympics, if they could go back and reintroduce golf, I think they would have done it earlier and taken advantage of the Tiger and Phil.
Yeah.
You know, those two never got to play in one.
Right.
They never got to play in an Olympics. And I think you imagine having Tiger with a gold medal around his neck during I think that golf in the Olympics would have been a much bigger deal for us
for sure,
than it
yeah.
is now. Mm-hmm. So, you know, to me, it's like the Tiger test. Well, did Tiger win a gold medal? No. Well, then I'm not interested. You know, it just got its late start in 2016 after, well, I mean, actually, golf was in the Olympics long before I think they were even playing with steel shafts, you know, like way back in the day. But, I just think that golf is growing in the Olympic arena. I think it's just gone from not being there to eventually now being relevant and will continue to be more relevant as we can, I think, do a better job focusing on who's qualifying, where it all stands, because we talk about the Ryder Cup standing so much. We talk about President's Cup, and we should talk a little bit more about President's Cup and who's going to make the team and who's not. But I don't really recall too many discussions about what's our Olympic team looking like, who's going to play, who's going to be the big four, who's on the outside looking in. And I'm surprised there wasn't more of a public outcry that Bryson DeChambeau wasn't on the team.
Well, Bryson will let you know.
Well, he'll let you know. But, I mean, it does make you scratch your head and go, well, wait a minute. This guy is absolutely the best player right now, and he's nowhere to be seen. And I think on certain levels that turns some people off. You put Bryson in the Olympics all of a sudden, I guarantee you those numbers are a little bit higher.
Yeah. 312-332-3776. Where did golf rank in your Olympic viewing experience? Was it even a part of your Olympic agenda as well? 312-332-3776. We'll take your calls and more when we come back. This segment brought to you by Coghill Golf and Country Club, a pure golf experience.
This is the CDGA Golf Show, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club, ESPN 1100.3 HD2, and the ESPN Chicago app. How's your golf game? Yeah, mine too, but more on that later. It's time for more golf talk on the CDGA Golf Show, your guide to golf around the world and in your neighborhood. The CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000. Now here are your hosts, Mike Gilligan and Tyler Aki.
Been talking some Olympic golf with you. By the way, this segment is brought to you by Golf Elgin, home of Bowes Creek Country Club and the Highlands of Elgin. If you want to join us, 312-332-3776. As the Olympic golf has come to a close on both the men's and the women's side, Scottie Scheffler, your winner on the men's side. Lydia Ko, your winner on the women's side. I do want to bring up, so Nelly Korda won back in, I guess it's technically 2021, out in Tokyo. But Nelly Korda, just, it's been an uneven year for her. She came out and not only was she in the same breath as Scottie Scheffler, she was playing better than Scottie at the beginning of the year.
She technically better than Scottie Scheffler. Had a better record.
They would talk about her, or they would put their numbers side by side, and they'd be like, over the last 5 weeks, I think it was, they had combined for 9 first place finishes and a runner up. The runner up was Scottie.
Yeah.
They were
9 for 10.
And it was incredible. Like, I remember I was seeing on Twitter, like, people were saying, oh, you just got to do the Scottie Nelly parlay every week and you get unreal odds on it. But that's how she was playing. And then she comes out at the Olympics and is in a good spot to start, but then kind of stumbles. And then Sunday happens and she shoots 75 on Sunday. So she falls her way all the way back to 22nd, finishes 1 under for the event. The winning score, 10 under. Your podium finish got to 7 under. But Nelly Korda, just kind of an odd way that she's sort of fallen off, and she's missed cuts at majors too, but it was a hot start for her, and things have just kind of gone south for her lately.
It really has. I mean, it's been, like you said, the tale of two half seasons so far. The first half, you know, smooth sailing, couldn't have gone any better. Now it's like, I can't find it. And I was very surprised to see Nelly not one time during the Olympics break 70. I mean, yeah, she's usually good for at least a 66, a 67, and she's just
Not once, but you'd think twice she would have broken 70.
Absolutely. And that golf course, as we know, was very gettable. I mean, you know, you've got some of these ladies, 67 by Lydia and a 68 in her first or second and third rounds. Lots of 60s being shot by a variety of people. Celine Boutier, another French woman, she opens up with a 65. So the golf course wasn't exceptionally difficult for him. I think the stage was something new for him. But for somebody like Nelly, I'm just very surprised. I think I would have put her for sure finishing higher than Rose Zhang did. And she was our best United States finisher. So very puzzling about Nelly, only because I just think her swing and everything that she has is so beautiful. And I just don't know. Again, is it something that, you know, she hit this success and now if she doesn't maintain that level of success, does she now start to feel like she's failing and not living up to expectations because she set the expectation bar so unbelievably high that now she's having a, you know, a mentally challenging time maintaining that pace? Or is she just burnt out?
Yeah, that certainly could be the case as well. All right, in 2 minutes, let's talk Scottie Scheffler. Now that he's capped it off with a gold medal and still a little bit to go as well. All that coming up next. This segment is brought to you by Golf Elgin, home of Bowes Creek Country Club and the Highlands of Elgin.
This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app.
What his year?